Happy holidays, everyone. This is our belated Christmas gift to you here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Phil, did you have a good Christmas?
I had a very solid yet exhausting Christmas. How about yourself, Joe?
Not as probably exhausting as yours. I was in Georgia where it just rained the whole time. But overall, it was delightful. But I am most excited for the beginning of Big East play. In today's podcast, we are going to look at conference plays, which is what we've been anticipating for a couple of months now after a blah non-conference. We'll maybe briefly look back on what Marquette did in non-conference and then basically look at what lies in the road ahead. But Phil, I guess we'll start with the breaking news, if I use the term breaking loosely.
Our powers are restored.
On Tuesday, Marquette announced a contract extension for head coach Steve Wojciechowski. He is now under contract at Marquette through the 2021-22 campaign. So that would be like 7 seasons from now, something like that. Yeah.
So Owen would just be starting AAU or something at this point.
Yeah. Basically, the seniors for the 21-22 season, they are currently high school sophomores. So that is how far out Wojo is under contract at Marquette. I guess, Phil, I don't know how to take it so much because, as we know in sports in general, particularly college sports, coaches' contracts don't mean a whole heck of a lot, really.
Yeah, to borrow the line from Varsity Blues, they aren't worth the Sherman Extra Soft they wipe their butts with.
Right, because a lot can change, as we well know, with coaches' contracts. But I don't know what you took from it, Phil, but I guess what I kind of took from the announcement is that Wojo is probably doing everything well behind the scenes, the things that probably don't get written about as much are the things that we don't see in box scores, because he surely didn't get this extension because he beat Chicago State and Presbyterian. I think it's more about the relationships around the campus, the relationships with the boosters, relationships with the administration at the university, the president, the athletic director, the way he's recruiting, things like that. I just think there's probably just an overall very positive vibe about Wojo on the campus, and I guess that's why they felt the timing was right to give him a couple more years on his deal.
I certainly think that's probably part of it, and that's certainly one of the things that seemed to be indicated from the Bill Skoll, the AD, in the Journal Sentinel online article about the contract extension. I think one of the other aspects to it is, whether it makes sense or not, I mean, I'm not a sophomore or junior in high school being highly recruited by a lot of schools, but, there's an argument to be made that this indicates, as you said, that sophomores in high school who, are part of the current targets that Wojo's going after, mostly juniors, but sophomores in high school, that would say that Marquette's going to retain Wojciechowski through their senior years. So it says maybe there's a player or two right now that that gives them some reassurance that, hey, this is going to be the coach for the long term, and I want to sign.
Yeah, I don't know if I would read that much into it personally, because like I said, coaching contracts don't mean a whole heck of a lot. If some school wants Wojo bad enough, and heaven forbid he wanted to leave, and they wanted to pay enough, well, they would just tear that contract right up. And on the flip side, if Wojo goes on some kind of miraculous run and gets Marquette to a Final Four and goes and has some amazing tournament run, this contract will also be torn up and he'll get a raise. Because I don't know what Wojo is making now. Financial terms aren't disclosed. They've never been disclosed.
Right. Marquette's
University.
A private institution.
Whatever Wojo is making, if he were to have significant tournament success over and over again, he would get a new contract and would get a raise. But I guess all this really is, it just says the administration is happy with the job Wojo is doing, both on the court and off. So good for Wojo, good for Marquette, and that's basically all I have to say about today's news.
Well, the only thing I will say about this, and this is slightly negative, is I have zero issue with the contract extension. I think it's fine. I think to a certain extent it's a bit of a non-starter. The only thing I don't like, the timing/PR aspect of it, coming right before conference season. I mean, just from a timing standpoint, if we go on to lose 5 straight games in conference season and we just extended Wojo, it's not a good look.
I will say this. It does mean more for Wojo than it does for Marquette, doesn't it? It means if Marquette were in a situation where it wanted to part ways with Wojo, God forbid, they would owe him more. That's basically, but from Wojo's perspective, if he wanted to leave, I mean, like I said, the where he was going would just have to pick up the tab, and it's not like it would be any skin off his back. So basically, it's much better for Wojo than, but, you know, it's good for Marquette, too, I guess, to say that, hey, we've got our guy locked up through, you know, 6 years from now.
Well, and it probably means, what it means is for to get the extra years and the extra money for Wojo, there's probably something in there, you know, if Duke comes calling, that Marquette gets a little extra money in the buyout, or, you know, if Wojo wants to leave, that Marquette gets a little more money than they would otherwise. But, you know, so that defrays the cost of paying a search
committee. Yeah, I mean, just kind of speculating there. Right. I mean, there'll probably be out clauses or whatever. But who knows? Bottom line is Wojo is locked up for, and I use the term locked up loosely, for 6 more years. I guess it's better to have coaching news like that than say, you know, what's going on up the road.
I'm
just going to leave that there.
Yeah, let's not mention anything about the western part of the western central part of the
state. Only thing I'll add is just it was just very nice surprise that, you know, Wojo beat Bo Ryan and then forced him to cry and, you know, leave coaching forever. So, and that's the story I'm going with.
that's the only one where we're going to publicly discuss.
And we're just going to leave that right there. Let's talk non-con basketball, shall we?
Sure, absolutely.
Non-conference,
amazing, right?
Non-conference basketball is almost over for Marquette. We still have that dumb Stetson game right in the middle of conference play, but Marquette got through it 10-2. No real surprises towards the end of non-conference play. Maybe a lackluster effort a little bit. Wojo said he wasn't too happy with the effort against Presbyterian, but it was a win by 18 points, and considering they probably had, what, 3 or 4 days off of practice?
Yeah. I'm not terribly concerned. I mean, there were back-to-back. Chicago State and Presbyterian were both significant wins given the were significant scoring differentials given the competition, but they looked lackluster. But coming off the, you know, if you look at the back half of the schedule, come off an emotional win at Wisconsin that forces a coach to retire, you know, then a week of finals, then play Chicago State, then have 4 or 5 days of Christmas vacation going home, then come back on a day or two of practice and try and get back into the swing of things. That's tough for anyone.
Yeah, just look at Presbyterian as just a sleepy effort, you know, just a sleepy effort. They're going to be hopefully woken up for the big game on Wednesday, which is probably when most of you will be listening to this podcast, against Seton Hall. So basically what we're going to do now in the podcast is now that we've been through basically a third of the season, just the non-conference part, we're going to now look at Big East play, maybe with a different perspective than we did at the beginning of the season. You know, maybe some teams are now better than we thought, Xavier. Some teams may be worse than we thought, Georgetown. And we're going to go through a quick kind of game-by-game of the Big East schedule and maybe think where we think Marquette may fall. Before we get to that, Phil, and we reveal what we think the record might be, as it relates to tournament play, Marquette probably on the outside looking in right now. But is there a win total that you have circled? Say, if Marquette gets to that number, I'm going to feel really good about March.
If we get, I would say, if we get to 12 conference wins from where we are now, and again, this is assuming we win the cowboy hat game against Stetson.
Right.
If we get to 12 wins in conference, I mean, there's probably some finagling in terms of some wins are more important than others. But if we get to 12 conference wins, I think we're in. If we get anything less than 12 conference games, I think we're looking at having to win one or two games in conference season or in the conference tournament. With the lower the regular season number of wins, the more in the conference season or conference tournament we're going to have to win.
Yeah, I guess the number I've kind of got circled is about 11. If Marquette can get 11 wins in the conference, which is a lot, I know, but, you know, making the tournament's got to be tough, you know, especially right. When you have a non-conference schedule like Marquette has. I've kind of got the number 11 circled. If they get to 11, I'll be feeling pretty good that they'll be on the right side of the bubble. Now, granted, it depends on who those 11 wins are against. It would be great if one of them or two of them would be a nice road win. One or two of them would be a win over one of the top two or three teams in the conference. That's kind of, and you avoid the bad losses like DePaul or Creighton at home.
Well, like, that's going to be critical. Is that the bottom four? St. John's, DePaul.
I guess Creighton's not as bad as I thought. But
yeah. Well, Creighton. Honestly, the four at almost to this point, and it's kind of weird that Georgetown's down here. we certainly can't lose to Georgetown at home now, the way they've performed in the non-conference. So St. John's, DePaul, Creighton, certainly we have to sweep. And Georgetown is at a minimum split.
Right.
With the rest of the games, you know, we're going to have to win, you know, five or six of those.
I mean, you really need to dominate the bottom third of the conference, right? If you were to, say, take the three worst teams, you kind of got to sweep them. And then you've got to, like, and then you've really kind of got to split with some teams in the middle and maybe steal one from some at the top. If you look at the Big East, Phil, I think it's safe to say that the Big East will certainly get four teams in the tournament. Assuming that those would be Xavier, Villanova, Providence, and Butler. And even if one of those teams falls off in conference play, whoever overtakes them would grab that fourth spot, whether it's one of these teams in the middle, Seton Hall, Marquette, Georgetown, whatever. But I think it's safe to say the Big East would get four. I think there's a good shot the Big East could get five, and I think six would kind of be the dream scenario. So I kind of look at it as you've got those top four right now. Again, Xavier, Nova, Providence, Butler. And then I think you've got three teams, probably, maybe four, I don't know, that are trying to fight for those fifth and sixth spots. That would be Georgetown, Seton Hall, Marquette, maybe Creighton.
Yeah, I think, you know, five, I think, is possible. Six would be a big stretch. I think the only way the Big East gets six in is if there's a lot of parity in a lot of conferences, including the Big East, where, you know, Villanova, you know, because like Ken Pom right now has Villanova and Xavier semi running away with the conference at 14-4 each. You know, so if they fall back to 12-6 each or something like that, if the Big East is a little more bunched up, I think six is possible, but I think four or five to be the most likely scenario within the Big East.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, the other thing that's, you know, that's tough is I think what's interesting is I think from the non-conference, I'm actually more excited about how Marquette's performed, and I think they're better than my expectations, but the Big East is even more better, if I can
more
use
better.
Poor English, more better than I anticipated as well. So, you know, I would say that Marquette is performing above expectations, but I'm a little concerned about how they're going to perform in the Big East. We'll see if they'll continue to rise, but it's going to be a tough haul.
The good news is there are a lot of opportunities to get quality wins, something Marquette is seriously lacking. So while Marquette is probably on the outside looking in right now, there are plenty of opportunities for Marquette to play its way in. So, and I think that begins with the first game, Phil, as we kind of maybe start to trudge through the schedule a little bit. I kind of broke it down almost into three four-game segments and two three-game segments. So I'm going to start with this first four-game segment that I've kind of broken it down to. And no segment is necessarily easy, and none of it, but it's all pretty difficult. I'd say this is kind of a middle-of-the-road difficulty as it relates to the rest of the Big East schedule, as there are teams that are tough, but I think teams that Marquette can play with and beat in this first four-game stretch, which is Seton Hall at home, Georgetown away, Providence away, and St. John's at home. I kind of look at this for I am trying to be optimistic with the first two, Phil, and I have Marquette beating Seton Hall at home and then going on the road and beating a Georgetown team that's in a bit of a funk lately. And I think that would be a great start to conference play if you could start with those two wins.
Yeah, I agree with both of those wins. The Seton Hall game we're gonna preview by itself a little later in this. But I think both are wins. I think it's the exact right time to play at Georgetown. They are in a bit of a funk. They're not playing very confidently. So I think we catch them, and that's a big, you know, depending on how Georgetown has the possibility to pull it out. So that could turn out to be a
Georgetown
big
has
win.
The talent. You just hope that you're not the team they wake up against. Yeah, Georgetown, all right, they have lost to Radford, Monmouth, and UNC Asheville at home. Woof. And they just barely got by Charlotte.
Yeah, they have really been struggling, and you know, so that's not a team you want to lose.
And they open at the House of Horrors that is DePaul. So who knows how Georgetown will be, what kind of mood the Hoyas will be in when Marquette sees them on Saturday. But I agree. I think it's a good time to play Georgetown before they figure things out. And again, Seton Hall's a critical. I feel like we're going to say this for every game in conference play, Phil, but the Seton Hall game's important. Maybe they're all important for different reasons, but the Seton Hall game is important because, like I said a minute ago, They're one of those three or four teams that Marquette is going to be battling with for that fifth or sixth spot in the conference, along with Georgetown and Creighton. So I think it's really important to get a leg up on Seton Hall early, especially since you got them at home. When you play the teams that you're going neck and neck with, I mean, you've got to win those games at home.
Yeah, absolutely. The key is going to be holding serve at home and stealing a couple on the road. That's going to be the key to success.
Okay, so for the second half of this initial four-game segment, it gets a little more challenging with a trip to Providence. I have that one as a loss, but then I have them rebounding at home against an inexperienced St. John's team that's kind of in rebuilding mode, and hopefully, that's just bottom line. That's a game you got to win in the conference. So I got a loss win these next two, which would be January 5th and January 9th. So then at this point of the season, I would have Marquette at 3-1 in the conference.
We agree again. I think the Fighting Chris Dunns are going to be a tough out. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see. Wojo's talked about Sandy Cohen being the primary stopper. See if he's attempting to guard Dunn or how they defensively handle that. So at Providence is going to be real tough, especially coming off an at Georgetown game. St. John's, that's one you have to have. That's one of the bottom threes.
Yeah. You can't. Bottom line, you can't be losing to any. If Marquette wants to make the tournament, they can't lose to anybody in the bottom third of the conference.
Right, and it feels awfully early, but I would say we don't know how the first three games turn out, but St. John's is a must-win.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Marquette just has so little room for error because of its weak non-conference schedule. All right, so we're through that first four-game segment. Now I'm going to move on to the second four-game segment that I've broken the season down to, and this I kind of have is a half-good, half-bad, or half-really difficult and half-very manageable. Villanova and Xavier back-to-back on a Wednesday and Saturday. That is about as tough as it gets in this conference. And then DePaul and St. John's home and away. So basically, I have what you would expect here. Two losses, two wins.
We are in violent agreement again on those four. And again, the DePaul at home and St. John's on the road are must-wins. If you can steal a Xavier or an at Villanova... and we don't know if Villanova. I don't think we know if Villanova is going to be on there in their bandbox or at the pavilion or what, you know, because the atmospheres are different between the two. But if you can steal either Xavier or at Villanova, especially at Villanova, you've got a little more cushion. But DePaul and St. John's are must wins.
Yeah, Marquette's going to be heavy underdogs. I mean, KenPom has. I mean, certainly has both of those games as double-digit losses for Marquette. Actually, the Xavier game, he has a little closer because that's a home game. He has the Xavier is a 7-point loss for Marquette. But again, he has them winning relatively comfortably home and away, DePaul and St. John's back-to-back. So, again, I really don't have any surprises there. So I kind of have that broken. I'm actually trying to look up, as I'm talking to you, where that Villanova game is. And I guess it doesn't say.
Yeah, I can't find it either.
All right, so we'll have to look that up later, or just edit it in the podcast later on. Moving on to now this is a three-game segment I have, and honestly, this is a very, very maybe the toughest three-game stretch, perhaps, in Marquette's non-conference play when they go when they have Butler at home and then away at Seton Hall and away at Xavier. I have this, Phil, as three straight losses. So maybe when people this may be where people get to be a little discouraged about the tournament hopes, because after three straight losses, if you're doing the math on my predictions, I would have them at 5-6 at this point in conference play. But I just think that's just a tough, tough three-game stretch. You're coming right – by the way, we skipped over the Stetson game, which comes before the Butler game.
Well, that's where we rebuild our confidence.
Yeah, well, you think. Hopefully, it might be a false sense of confidence with a team like Butler coming in. But Butler, I mean, at home, though, that is an opportunity to get a great win. But for the sake of these predictions, I do have that as a loss. And then going to Seton Hall, I think, just because I think Marquette and Seton Hall might be relatively evenly matched as far as overall talent, strength of schedule, things like that, I have that as a loss. And then going to Cincinnati to play Xavier, I think that'll be tough.
I actually took the optimistic route. I actually have wins against Butler and Seton Hall on the road and a Ooh. Loss to Xavier. I think we'll match up well with With Butler, I don't think they're going to. I mean, they've got some pieces, but I don't know that they'll necessarily match up with our front court. But we'll see. So
at this point of the season, I have Marquette at 5-6. You have an optimistic 7-4 at this point, which would be very exciting, and I hope you are right. But we'll see how that plays out.
I have a very poor track record, so don't hold your breath.
You are the optimistic one on this podcast. I will give you that. But now this next four-game stretch, speaking of optimism, I broke this into a four-game segment for Marquette. And I actually have this pretty optimistic. Providence at home, Creighton at home, at our House of Horrors, DePaul, and then at Creighton. I have Marquette getting some momentum here, and I actually have four straight wins here. It'll be tough, of course, but Marquette's got to get something significant if they want to make the tournament. But I think this is a great opportunity to get a good team like Providence at home. Creighton, which I think Marquette should, match up fairly well with Creighton, especially at home. And then you just got to play well and just not have your annual brain fart at DePaul. And then if you could do that, maybe you can go on the road to Omaha and get another win. So I think this is a shot at redemption where I, on my predictions, I would have Marquette at 9-6 at this point.
I actually agree with all four predictions. I have all four as wins. I really wanted to give a loss to Providence at home, but I think by the back half of the conference season, with the talent and the youths of the team no longer really being youths, I think we'll
the Utes.
I think we'll be playing strongly at that point. So I have all four as a win. But again, not to keep harping, but Creighton at DePaul and at Creighton are must wins.
Yeah, again, like I said before, those are teams you think to be in the bottom three or four of the conference. With all due respect to Creighton, who is probably playing a little bit better than I'm giving them credit for on this podcast, but again, that's a team you've got to win if you want to make the tournament, finish in the top half of the Big East. Now, what's interesting at this point in our predictions, Phil, I have Marquette at 9-6, which is not bad. You have Marquette at 11-4, entering this last three-game segment, which is critical. This is a very tough stretch. Villanova, Georgetown, Butler. Villanova at home, Georgetown at home, Butler on the road. Now, hypothetically speaking, let's say our scenarios play out. If Marquette's at 9-6, I think we'd be feeling okay, but also be excited about some opportunities coming up to secure a tournament berth. If your prediction is accurate, at 11-4 with these three games left, we might be talking conference title potential at this point, because there are three big games left against teams that you would figure to be, at the top of the conference. So,
I think it's fair to say if my prediction's correct, essentially Marquette would be controlling its own destiny, both from a conference title standpoint and from a tournament bid standpoint. I think your prediction, Not to crap all over my predictions, because I really do believe these things, but yours is probably more likely and less blue and gold Kool-Aid type. But yours, we're certainly at that point sweating, because we didn't mention it, but I mean, our non-conference strength of schedule was 340 out of 351.
That's bad.
That's really bad and tough to overcome. Yeah. The next closest in the Big East was Creighton at 288. So that's a lot to overcome. So if you're at 9-6, I'm saying if you're at 9-6 in that last three game stretch, we have to go 2-1 in that last three game stretch.
And unfortunately, in my predictions, I do not have that. I have Marquette at 1-2. I have them losing to Villanova again. I have them beating Georgetown at home. And then I have a loss in Indianapolis to Butler. So my final prediction for the Big East for Marquette may still be too optimistic, but I have them at 10-8.
I have a loss to Villanova, win against Georgetown, and then a loss at Butler, which would finish us at 12-6 in my prediction, which I think gets us in the tournament. You're 10-8. That one, I'd be sweating an awful lot of bullets unless we won at least two in the conference tournament.
Yeah, I would not feel confident that a tournament berth would be imminent if my predictions were 100% accurate, which we all know they will not be. But based on my predictions, I don't think Marquette really – what would be their most significant win? It would probably be, what, Providence at home?
Yeah.
Based on my predictions.
Based on your predictions.
The most significant wins, according to my predictions, would be Providence at home. Basically, I really didn't go out on a limb, really, on any. So Maybe a sweep of Creighton would be significant, depending on what they do. But yeah, I have basically on my predictions, I have Marquette being swept by Butler, swept by Villanova, swept by Xavier. Sweeping Georgetown might be significant too, but
it depends on how Georgetown. I mean, Georgetown's got the name, but it depends on how they perform in conference.
So a lot of variables there, hard to tell. But just kind of not knowing how the rest of the conference or the country is going to play out. Based on my predictions, I think 10-8 would be just a little bit short, wrong side of the bubble. Marquette would need a strong showing in New York to secure a berth. Your prediction, I would sign off on right now, no matter what the rest of the country does. I would sign off on 12 wins in this conference right now, because on your predictions, you have a split with Butler, which would be spectacular. You would have one win over Providence. You have a sweep over a
sweep
over
of Providence and Seton Hall.
No, you have a split with Providence.
Oh, no, I do have a split.
Yeah. But a sweep over Seton Hall, which would be great. And a sweep over Georgetown. So, yeah, that would be pretty darn good.
Well,
so,
the key is going to be, you know, we can make all the distinctions about 10-8 and above. The key is going to be, especially if it's like 10-8 or 11-7, is we're going to have to beat at least one game beat one of the top three, Villanova, Xavier, Butler. We're going to have to win one of those.
Or Providence.
Or Providence, but I certainly think Providence is probably, no offense to Providence, but they're probably nationally second tier to Villanova, Xavier, and Butler.
Yeah, we'll find out on New Year's Eve. I'm looking forward to watching those games, besides watching Marquette's game against Seton Hall on the 30th, which is Wednesday. I'm definitely looking forward to the rest of the Big East and all those showdowns, because Marquette, it's worked out for the Big East because they've got the right four teams playing each other to open the conference season. So while football will certainly steal headlines on New Year's Eve,
you're definitely at a minimum going to have two TVs going, or a TV and a laptop.
Yeah, I guess, but the football would have to be on the laptop, thanks Fox Sports 1.
Yeah.
I don't know if it will be available on the Fox Sports Go app, if that's even available on your service provider. But, yeah, so that's kind of a look at the Big East Conference season. Look, yeah, is it going to be tough? Yes, it is. But making the tournament really shouldn't be easy. You can't say, well, maybe if we just go, 500 in the Big East, that'll probably be good enough. No, I don't think it will. Marquette needs to overachieve a little bit. Marquette needs to wow some people in Big East play, I think, to make the tournament. And it's realistic. It's not like it's pie in the sky predictions here that it's, that we're talking about an eighth or ninth place team and having a dream season. I think Marquette is legitimately good enough to finish right around fifth in the conference if it plays 18 good games. Now, that's probably unrealistic to play, say, 18 good games, but if Marquette can play a dozen really good games, and maybe you have a few stinkers along the way, I think you can steal, find a way to get, 10 or 11 wins out of it and be interesting and be relevant. So, well, let's see how it plays out.
Well, and remember, this team has shown over the non-conference an ability to grow and get better. Henry Ellenson, as talented as he is, is certainly better now than he was, against Belmont in that first game. Same with Hanif Cheatham or Tracy Carter. Tracy Carter's a little up and down more, but this team is continually growing, and it's the youngest team in the Big East. So while that's a double-edged sword, you can make the argument the youngest team is going to have the most inexperience and is going to struggle the most, but there's also the potential where they could grow the most, and they could go from a team that's, something that a 10-8 finish is unrealistic to now all of a sudden we're talking 12-6 is realistic, which is kind of what I'm basing on. I'm assuming a significant amount of growth out of this team.
Yeah, and plus there's just the Ellenson factor. I mean, right. He is, by most measures, the second best freshman in the country right now.
Marquette, he'd be first best if he had the last name Simmons.
He would. Marquette does have a website up now touting him for both Freshman of the Year and All-American, which is not ridiculous. I think it's great that Marquette is promoting him like that, because if you have a talent like that, you should promote him. You see football teams make pushes for their guys for Heismans all the time, and I think it's a good, I think it's a great idea. So I applaud for Marquette for kind of putting together this little page, especially for Henry Ellenson, and hopefully it works out, because while I think no matter what happens, Henry or Ben Simmons is going to be the number one pick in the draft. That's not what the National Freshman of the Year is. It's performance-based. It is statistics-based. And if it is not out of the realm of possibility that Henry Ellenson could have a better season than Ben Simmons. And so I think it's cool that they have that page up. Maybe Henry is going to turn up a notch. And if he does, maybe we could have a lot of fun here in Big East play.
Well, right. And keep in mind that you know, it's – and we'll see when it goes up against Big East competition. But I would put our front court between Fisher and Ellenson, I would put our front court up against any front court in the Big East. Mm-hmm. That's going to be our strength. So if we can get – good to really good guard play, I think we'll put together a season, and Ellenson should kind of come along with that. And if he can kind of put the team on his shoulders, he'll kind of earn that freshman of the year simply by carrying a good team, whereas Simmons will be a really great player on a mediocre to not very good team.
Yeah. Possibly, you know, and I agree with you that there just aren't many teams that could match up with Ellenson and Fisher when they're at their best, and not just in the Big East, but really in the country. I mean, yeah, certainly there are some teams that could match up with them, but when you look at the entire country, but in the Big East and for most of the country, 2 6'11" guys who have that much skill on the offensive end, it's really tough. And you're going to see games. Hopefully, I hope that, you know, when the foul situation is not an issue for Marquette and those guys can both play more than 30 minutes, I think you're going to see some really good performances and that make you just say, wow, this team might actually really have something here. And yeah, as you said, that may depend on the guard play, getting them a chance to do some damage down low. But when you have 2 6'11" guys playing at a high level, it is going to be really tough for anyone to stop. And I think that would be a formula for Marquette stealing some of those games that they're not predicted to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key, and we've always kind of known this, the key is going to be what happens with the point guard situation. Does Tracy Carter and, to a lesser extent, Hanif Cheatham, do they continue to grow into the role and allow Henry and Luke to be successful? Because, you know, Henry more so than, or less so than Luke, you know, Henry can sort of feed himself in the post, you know, just by rebounding the ball and bringing it up the court. But Luke's going to need support getting the ball in a position to score. So that's going to be critical to how we go forward.
Yeah. Looking forward to Wednesday. Again, most of you will probably be listening to this podcast on Wednesday, so that will be Marquette's first conference game against Seton Hall. But let's break down Seton Hall a little more extensively while we have a few minutes before we get out of here, Phil. As we said earlier, Seton Hall is going to be a tough game just because they're a team that's kind of borderline tournament team right now, if you look at some of the bracketologists around the country. So been playing pretty well for the most part. I think Isaiah Whitehead has matured here in his second year. He was a guy who was probably looked at as a one and done a year ago. Didn't have quite the freshman campaign he would have liked, but he's definitely becoming a little bit more of a mature player, a little bit more of a leader for that team. And, of course, Delgado is back for them. Maybe he hasn't played quite as well as he maybe would have liked, but still an efficient player and a guy that can hurt you in a lot of different ways. How do you see the matchup with Seton Hall on Wednesday?
Well, I see it as an interesting, you know, we just got done talking about in the Big East in general, but it's basically a similar thing between Marquette and Seton Hall. Seton Hall is more perimeter oriented, and Marquette is more front court oriented. So I see a lot of interesting interesting matchups. You know, will Seton Hall be able to defend our bigs? But conversely, will our perimeter guys be able to defend Isaiah Whitehead? Kadeem Carrington successfully without either A, fouling, or B, letting them drive and getting Luke and Henry into foul trouble when they're trying to protect the rim. So those are going to be the interesting ones. The other part of it is Delgado, I think, will be a key because of you know, he's kind of their key front court player, and he's got foul trouble issues, if you will, or he's prone to foul a lot. So that'll be an interesting matchup with Marquette.
I think, yeah, I'm probably going to say this in every podcast for every game. If Luke and Henry can play significant minutes and not be limited by foul trouble, I think Marquette wins this game. I feel relatively confident. Again, tough matchup, but you say that just about every game in the Big East. But if they can get ample minutes out of Luke and Henry, I feel relatively good about this game. I know Whitehead could go off at any time and really kind of score in bunches, but I just feel better about Marquette's ability to control the game if their bigs are on the floor. So sticking with the prediction I went with when we went game by game, and I'm going to predict a win on Wednesday for your Marquette Golden Eagles.
Yeah, I predict the win as well. I think, you know, Seton Hall's strengths kind of play against Marquette's strengths, and Seton Hall's weaknesses, Seton Hall's strengths, I guess I should say, are not where Marquette has weaknesses. So I think we can match up well, but we can also take advantage of some of the weaknesses of Seton Hall. You know, we don't really have to. Seton Hall, according to KenPom, is 205th in the country in steal percentage. On offense, so you know, we're not worried about them turning us over so much. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
For what it's worth, KenPom has Marquette as a slight favorite in this game, a 2-point favorite, 55% chance of winning. So this is essentially a 50-50 game when you're kind of breaking down the conference records. By the way, we didn't mention it earlier when we went through our records out there. Phil had 12-6, I had 10-8. KenPom has Marquette at 7-11.
We don't like him very much.
Yeah, so that, you know, we're just all going to be all angry and bitter about that. But again, that's kind
of statistics are terrible.
Yeah, statistics based thing. But he does, you know, to be fair, he has a lot of these games as 50-50 games. You know, games that could really go either way. For example, he has DePaul as a 50% chance of winning, where he has it currently listed as a loss. The Butler game Marquette has at home, he has that as a loss by just 3 points. The Xavier game, which is at home, he has that as a loss by 7 points. Creighton on the road, lost by 6 points. So there are a lot of, in Georgetown on the road, he has that as a loss by 5 points. So there are a lot of games that could go either way. So, and as we learn more and more about this team, we'll kind of see how the predictions nationally shift for Marquette. But they can change start changing some minds on Wednesday night, and hopefully they do just that against Seton Hall.
Yeah, and actually, I just realized I said something backwards. The one thing Marquette needs to watch is the turnovers, because I said it wrong before. Seton Hall turns people over, and Marquette is prone to turnovers. So I think that's the one thing that's going to be the key, is if Marquette can initiate the offense and avoid turnovers, I think Marquette wins, well, not easily. I think they win comfortably. If Marquette turns the ball over, you know, like they're prone to, then I think Marquette will be in a struggle, and it could go either way.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, you're right. Seton Hall is 44th in the country in turning over their opponents.
Yep, and we're 238 in being turned over. So those two things combined, not good.
So that could be. So there's your recipe for disaster on Wednesday if Seton Hall can turn Marquette over. If they start pressing and Marquette's guards get a little lost, be concerned. Be very concerned. I think that's when Marquette gets in a little bit of trouble in the press, honestly, I think that's a situation where Ellenson could help out, because there's probably not going to be a guard on Ellenson, and then he could bring the ball up, you know.
Yeah.
And at least get the ball into the front court, and then maybe the guards can settle down a little bit. So I'll be interested to see how Wojo adjusts if Seton Hall does bring out some kind of a press, starts frustrating Marquette's guards, turning over Carter and Wilson and Cheatham. So that would be something to watch early on, but definitely plan on Marquette maybe trying to slow the game down just a little bit, get in the half court, working inside to the big guys. That'll be the formula for success.
Yeah, and one of the thing, the one of the things I meant to bring up during the Big East general review, you know, given the softness of the schedule, I don't think we've seen nearly the full complement of be they plays or strategies or capabilities of the team. I think, you know, Wojo was looking really at fundamental stuff, getting the basics together. I think there's probably some, you know, different looks and different, you know, one of the things we never saw Ellenson being inbounded to on the press. I think that's something, like you said, Ellenson can help break that. If Ellenson is inbounded to, then either he can bring it up and initiate, or, you know, he's an outlet, and then, you know, if Tracy or Hanif is the inbounder, then that's an immediate break of that press.
I mean, it's interesting how they do it because, you know, I'm certainly no expert on how to break a press, but I wouldn't know if I would necessarily inbound it to Ellenson because you don't want maybe a guards swarming him right away. But if a guy like – if Carter and Wilson are getting swarmed in the backcourt, I would hope Ellenson would come back out there to help. And he would be there, and then he would, like, hopefully not have a guy on him, and then he could kind of get it across midcourt, and then you can kind of figure things out from there. But
yeah, the only reason I bring that up is Ellenson, if they're going to guard him with guards, you know, he's 6'10", just hold your arms up with the ball until someone gets over and open and pass it to him, you know?
Just make sure you don't hold it for 10 seconds.
That there is that.
Yeah. But all right, so we'll look forward to the game on Wednesday. We'll be looking forward to bringing you many more podcasts over the course of Big East play. Hopefully this will be a weekly thing throughout the season, and hopefully we have more good than bad to talk about.
Yep, I'd love to talk about how we've won two in a row in conference play the next time we talk.
That is hopefully the plan. We didn't break down the Georgetown game much, but I'll say about that game is kind of like we said earlier, Phil, Georgetown has struggled shooting the ball. Hopefully they don't figure it out by Saturday, and I think you can kind of catch them napping there.
Yeah, the big thing, the key there is going to be DSR and you know, can you stop him offensively? I think he's the initiator for everything that that Georgetown does. So, you know, if you can slow him down, yeah, they've got Bradley Hayes, who's 7 foot, but, you know, I think Fisher can go up against him successfully, match up with him well. So if you can stop DSR, I think that's going to be the key to beating that's Smith Rivera, by the way.
I picked up what you were throwing down there. I talked Georgetown a little bit.
I'm just trying to avoid any and all pronunciation issues.
No, I totally understand. Basically, a similar formula of success, right? Stop the athletic guard, feed the bigs, and don't turn it over.
Right, so the game planning should be done already.
So there, you're set to go. You're welcome, Wojo.
If you want to send a little bit of that contract extension money our way, that would be accepted.
That would be cracksidewalks.com. To just forward that along. But anyway, hopefully it's a good week for Marquette. As always, we thank you guys for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. If you have any feedback, comments for us, we welcome them. I'm on Twitter at JoeMcCann3. Phil's on there at MOOOF23. Team page would be Crack Sidewalks. Go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the blogs. You can leave your comments there. We have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs as well. And we are on iTunes. Download us. Take us anywhere you go. Looking forward to a good week, Phil. Hopefully you got two wins.
I'm super excited for conference play, so let's go out and get some wins so we can have another positive podcast.
Happy New Year, everyone. Seashells and balloons.